You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for tuning in, listening. You can be a part, 855-752-4842. Jess P.S. working hard on the board for you and jazz as hell. Our pal, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, checking in from the Sunshine State. No more key lime pie. The scallops are gone, so it's time to talk. Harvey, welcome back, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and it's good to see you guys by way of this StreamYard.
Yeah, man, you gotta love the tech. You're looking like you got a little sunshine, man. You're looking good.
You look tan.
Oh my God. I'm super jealous over here, Harvey, but we appreciate you checking and taking a little time out of your vacation / work holiday. I know you're giving a speech next week. We'll talk about that perhaps a little bit as well. Harvey, I wanted to start with the tweeting, the truthy social message coming out of the White House, specifically Donald Trump on Saturday, according to the New York Times, posted a social media single sentence that appears to encapsulate his attitude as he tests the nation's legal and constitutional boundaries in the process of upending the federal government and punishing his perceived enemies. The one sentence, quote, "He who saves his country does not violate any law." First showed up on his Truth Social, then on X, and then by late afternoon, he pinned the statement to the top of his feed. You got to make sure you got to see that. And then the official White House account on X posted his message in the evening. The quote is a variation of one sometimes attributed to Napoleon Bonaparte, although its origin is unclear. Let's assume it's Napoleon. Harvey, historically speaking, what's your interpretation of what Donald Trump is saying?
Well, why don't we go right to the heart of the matter? Right to the heart of the matter.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. Donald Trump is signaling that he may at some point, I don't know how soon, find a way to suspend the Constitution. I think that's what he's signaling. And I that's heavy, I know.
Yeah, man, come on, man. Wow. That's super heavy. I get it. Why? Tell me. Go. Dive into that. Why do you think that is?
I mean, look, the fact is that he doesn't know how the Supreme Court is going to respond to the suits that will make their way up to the court.
Yeah.
Now, he can assume that he's going to be in good shape because they basically licensed a president, you know, during the term to do almost anything practically, right? I mean, their decision that absolved him of the kinds of prosecutions that if the Democrats had been sharp about it, would have pursued earlier. Having said that, the fact is that he's not going to want it in the first year. He's not going to want to suffer massive embarrassment. Seriously speaking, I have this feeling that he would love to see I mean this sincerely, mm-hmm. that he would love to see massive, massive protests on the scale of the Black Lives Matter protests after the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota, because he would love to be able to declare some kind of state of emergency. I mean, he's clearly out to do in law. I mean, he doesn't care. He doesn't know anything about it, and he doesn't care. And Elon Musk is acting as if the law doesn't exist. So, you know, they're pushing the out. Look, I mean, I know that's heavy for late Monday afternoon on President's Day, no less. But I've had to confront that possibility, because otherwise, why would one say, basically, that why would he say that he stands, that whatever he's going to do, he's going to rationalize whatever he does is saving the nation because it's going to make America great again. So how does he present it? He presented it as, you know, if you save the nation, you're not breaking any laws. Well,
but isn't that a subjective, comment? I mean, saving the nation. What does that actually mean? In what regard? And defined by whom? And what are the measures thereof? And I get it. I agree with you. The pictures
of everyone, like those Republicans and MAGA types surrounding him, who are bowing, to him basically. That makes him out to be, in quotes, savior. Okay, Jesus saved him to save America, that kind of thing. So look, that's the take that I've come to. I for days I found ways of joking in my head about it, but no, I think it's pretty serious. And anyhow, so the fact is that let us hope that the courts are not bowing to him in the same way that, you know, those images in the pictures have Republicans and MAGA types doing it. So I must have that. I didn't mean to smack you in the head with that. But.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. That's Harvey K. smacking me in the head, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. I got a couple of reactions to that. Not only do I guess I agree in smaller terms to that, but I also think it's more of a stand back and stand by, or at least as much as a stand back or stand by as before. Because if one of his mega supporters, one of the J6ers, were, you know, in the course of trying to quote unquote save the country, however that is defined, violate the law, well, he's just going to pardon them, right? It seems to me to be more of that thing, more of a call to arms, call to the troops, keep them on stand back and stand by. But I guess I have a question on the legal thing. But the U.S. Supreme Court allowed for Donald Trump to not be prosecuted for quote unquote crimes. He can't do it while he's, you know, as president. But what about the effect of what he's trying to do? For example, he wants to get rid of some of these IGs, right? And some of these folks are there because of legislative law. And I think these are some of the cases that are going to go forward. Now, he can order them. He can make orders, but they can be found to be unconstitutional or even illegal that he may not be prosecuted for. But that doesn't mean that the actions that he ordered continue to go forward. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's as president, he can write whatever executive orders he wants to. The question is to what extent those will stand. Okay, and basically, as my understanding, they are in, what's the word? I don't know the legal term, but like in contravention, something like that, to what the law says.
Yeah.
Okay, how inspector generals are appointed, the grounds upon which they can be dismissed, which he completely ignored. Okay, because he didn't have any kind of evidence of malfeasance or any other activity.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I will also say this. Let's put it in another context for a moment, because you're saying he's, you know, telling the MAGA, you know, the worst of the MAGA types to stand by, you know, stand, mm-hmm. you know, be prepared kind of stuff. But it's also the case that the Democrats are right now, I don't know where they are. You know, they're like wallflowers in the political scene right now. And not unlikely, he just wants to put fear into the hearts and minds of liberals and progressives. Okay. And because imagine this, you want to cross Donald Trump? Do you want to be the one to cross Donald Trump? I mean, to my mind,
yes.
When he says something like that,
yeah.
Well, of course we do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Of course we do. But I have yet to really get a sense that the folks like Schumer and Jeffries are rallying troops for the sake of turning them out in any way. Mm. Okay. So anyhow, I mean, I'm looking forward to perhaps seeing, look, state attorneys general, folks, they fought him last time, okay? And as I think I've said, my daughter was herself involved by way of her position in the state of New York attorney general's office. Part of that, this time, there'll be a lot of suits coming forward, and it'll be a matter of time before, you know, the suits come. Although, you know, so far the judges are probably our best defense. I mean,
yeah.
Amazingly so. I mean, look, I'm going all over the place here because it just dawns on me, of course. In New York City, the people that he's fired or compelled to resign, you might say, okay, those folks were conservatives.
Yes!
I mean, they weren't liberal. They were nowhere near progressive. In fact, did they owe their positions in any way to his appointing them? I think in one of them,
yes. That's my understanding. Right. Yeah.
Right. I mean, in that sense, we could. I mean, it is wild, and it makes one laugh at the irony of all that. But it's also the case that he's threatening. I don't know. Even the one person who didn't resign, of course, did so because they needed somebody to do what was inevitable, send it to the court.
Sooner or later, someone will sign the document. Now, this is specifically about dropping charges against the mayor of New York, Adams, right? So then now all of a sudden you have, I believe it was, Daniel Sassoon. She was
Danielle.
Yep. And U.S. Attorney Hagan Scotton, conservatives that have resigned, and she kind of lit them up on her way out the door, specifically talking about Beauvais. Let me quote here. Although Mr. Beauvais disclaimed any intention to exchange leniency in this case for the mayor, Adams' assistance in enforcing federal law, this is the nature of the bargain laid bare in Beauvais' memo. So basically, my understanding is the mayor allowed for greater cooperation with ICE, right? And that was the quid pro quo to get charges dropped against the mayor. And now, not only did those folks resign, but some of the other four other members of the staff there resigned as well today. So this continued fallout. So I mean, does that give you some solace, Harvey, these conservative prosecutors at SDNY would go against the president on this?
Yeah, especially I think Danielle
Sassoon,
she clerked, I think, for one of the Supreme Court one of the conservative Supreme Court justices. So yeah, it gives me a little hope that who knows? She may have called her mentor and said, you know, this is unacceptable. I don't have an inside dope on that. I'm just
But this is the situation that we're in now. So we have some of these.
Oh, wait, it was Scalia, as I recall.
She worked for Scalia?
Yeah, who I guess is not,
he's not around anymore. All right, so if that's the case, we could look it up at the break and confirm that for our folks. This prosecutor, this conservative prosecutor, this clerked for Scalia, presumably, and refusing to go along with this, to go along with dropping valid charges against the mayor of New York. And in the last month or two, certainly we've seen the mayor of New York cozy up to the Trump administration, because that's what happens when you got a guy with pardon power in charge of the DOJ. They all go about weaponizing everything. Well, what is Donald Trump doing? That's exactly what he is doing. He's cutting deals to drop charges, of legitimate, valid charges brought by a conservative prosecutor at the SDNY to cut a deal. That's quid pro quo. That is corruption defined. Good to see some folks stepping down. There continues to be fallout from this. Folks, more Harvey K coming back with your calls as well. 855-752-4842. Stick around.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Where are you going? You can join us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joining us from the Sunshine State. Harvey, thank you for doing so. Yes, let us confirm. Sassoon, this is Danielle Sassoon, who left. She resigned SDNY after Beauvais told her to drop the charges. She did, in fact, according to the AP, clerk for Scalia. So this is not some woke liberal prosecutor. This is a 38-year-old who graduated from Yale, I believe. Let's see. I'm sorry. I stand corrected. Graduated from Harvard in 2008 and Yale in 2011. So at 38 years old, being told what to do, took some issue with that, has resigned. There's also been other resignations, Harvey, if I can find my notes here. Four more folks today, to my understanding, have also resigned, according to the New York Times. Four top officials, four deputy mayors to Eric Adams, are leaving, quote, to stay faithful to the oaths we swore to New Yorkers and our families. I mean, I think
one
that's...
One of those deputy mayors, I believe, is responsible for the police department. So his purview was really challenged by this Eric Adams decision to cooperate with Trump. I believe that's the...
Yeah, that's my understanding as well. Rep Dan Goldman, according to Politico, also took big issue with this. He called this outright extortion. This is way, way, way outside the bounds of the Department of Justice. He said on Sunday, it's the most significant event since the Saturday night massacre, referring to the 1973 firing of Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox during the Watergate scandal. Now, Beauvais was reaching out. Beauvais, you know, made this order saying that you got to drop these charges because, you know, it's interfering with his ability to run his election. He's running for office again, right? And his ability to cooperate with the Trump administration as it pertains to their immigration crackdown. So, I mean, it seems very straightforward. And now not just the conservative prosecutors, and now you have these other four folks, these top officials from his office, the deputy mayors also resigning. My understanding, Harvey, is that the governor of New York can excuse Mayor Adams from the mayor of New York. So that's something you think she should exercise that power if she has the ability to do so?
Well, she might now have a pretty good rationale for doing so. And that is, if these deputy mayors are resigning, then his ability to govern may be in question. And therefore, they may need better leadership to make sure that New York City is not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, rats from a ship. Here's the quote from a
political. By the way, I just have to tell you, I don't mean to waste your time.
No, this is great. This is what we're doing, man.
So, you know, PDNY stands for Police Department of New York. FDNY is Fire Department of New York. And every time you say SDNY, I know we're talking about the Southern District, but I keep thinking it's the Sanitation Department. That her job was to clear out the garbage.
Cleaning up the crap.
I just keep thinking of that rat with a piece of pizza in New York. 855-752-4842. Last week, Acting Deputy Attorney General Emile Beauvais directed the Justice Department to drop charges against Adams. In the memo, he wrote that the case, quote, improperly interfered with the mayor's reelection campaign and could make it more difficult for him to help Trump execute his immigration crackdown. Yeah. Now, Goldman, again, we talked about Goldman before, he said that Beauvais' move signals concerning future for the Justice Department. The politicization of the Department of Justice is really bad and dangerous way. It has to stop, and someone needs to put a stop to it. Now, Harvey, how do we... The Republicans have said that the prosecutions of Donald Trump, the various prosecutions, obviously there were many, and against the J6ers and so forth, this was all politicization of the Justice Department. But now we see that they're coming in and making these moves, seemingly doing exactly what the conservatives Meg has accused the Democrats of doing, Harvey.
Yeah, well, let's be clear about it. This is the J6ers and Donald Trump staged an insurrection on January 6th. By the way, have they banned that word from the lexicon yet?
Not yet.
I mean, they staged an insurrection, okay? And it doesn't require an order to the Justice Department to pursue insurrectionists, okay? That's part of their task, basically, right. Under the Constitution.
That's why they exist.
Okay. Now, in this instance, Donald Trump's attorney general, is it an acting attorney general, right?
Yes. Or is it? Yes. Okay. This was Beauvais, yes.
Right. It's basically pursuing, issuing a directive, you know, back off the mayor of New York, when the mayor of New York may well be himself he broke the law, number one. And number two, the line between police and ICE is for most cities a serious line that you do not cross. Okay. So, you know, I mean, how that, by the way, every time they speak like that and every time, and people hear that kind of stuff, I think it's part of this drive to literally silence Americans and corrupt their thinking. This is all part of that. It's unacceptable kind of stuff. And the Democrats should be every single day shouting, what they used to call it, blue murder, bloody murder kind of thing.
Blue murder and bloody murder. They didn't do great in the last election. Democrats need real leadership right now. Perhaps we can talk about that. I also did see that the new head of the DNC, he's going out on tour, Harvey. He's going to be hitting Wisconsin and some other states. I don't know if that's going to cut it. I mean, there have been some protests today, President's Day, you know, no king on President's Day kind of thing. We had some here in Madison as well. That is some reaction. But I'd love to see, I don't know, Kamala Harris, you know, out just going off on people. I'd love to see the governor of New York, Hochul, remove this guy if this is the case. If you have now these four other folks resigning, I mean, if you don't have an administration, how are you going to govern? How are you going to win? I mean, and the obvious corruption when you have conservative prosecutors resigning rather than fulfill the request of Beauvais and the Trump administration. Folks, come back with us. Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Plus more of your calls, 855-75-CIVIC. Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Got some callers, got some texters. We'll get to you momentarily, we do promise. Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, checking in from the Sunshine State. Got Jess Pierce working hard on the board. Harvey, we text a lot, me and Harvey and Jess. It's a lot of fun. Thank you for sharing. One of the things that you sent over was from the Midwestern Rural Radical. Democrats need real leadership right now. They don't have it. I want to read just one paragraph, and I want to get your sense of where you think things are right now, Harvey. As this author writes, the reasonable questions are, where are the Democrats? What power do they have? And here's a couple of examples that I've also noted over the course of the last several weeks that this author writes, and I think it's worth repeating. Instead of subpoenaing Elon, California Democrat Ro Khanna skipped the vote in a move consistent with his relationship with Musk. Instead of using his leverage with the looming government shutdown on March 14th, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer penned a letter waving his finger at Republicans. Instead of having a meeting about slowing down the business of the House, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and other Democrats on the House leadership blamed liberal groups for encouraging people to call their representatives. As the author writes, if they feel that way, they should resign and go home. Showing contempt for your base and concerned citizens is a slap in the face. Voters would not be blamed for voting against Democratic incumbents in the 2016 primaries if this is the response they get. You know, Harvey, the lack of action and indeed some of this seemingly purposeful no action is still, you know, that's still a decision. You know, you can make a decision not to do something. That is a decision. And I think it strikes home. It strikes a chord, at least with me. What's your sense on that observation of some of the leadership in the Dem Party right now, Harvey?
Well, I'm ashamed of them, to be blunt about it. I'm ashamed of them. I mean, right now, as another friend of mine said, they should have organized a road show already, where they're out on the road decrying what is happening and calling upon Democrats and, you know, disturbed Republicans to make themselves heard. But we're not seeing anything like that whatsoever. You know, I've always wondered, I wondered this in 2018 and 19, I wonder, what did Trump have on all these people?
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, that we get this kind of silence. I mean, look, I don't even want to hear the word resistance as a term. I don't want resistance. That's we're beyond that, right?
Yeah.
We're confronting, as I said before, a serious constitutional crisis, which could get even worse. And by the way, that piece that I sent you, that was by a former student of mine. I won't mention his name right on the air without his permission, but it's a former student of mine who lives down in southern Wisconsin. And the other friend of mine who said what she would love to see is somebody who lives in New York and has been a very active progressive member of the DNC in the past. So anyhow, it's,
well,
it's
frustrating. You taught him well, Harvey. We appreciate it, man. a little bit here to your point.
Last thing I just mentioned. So my friends, these are down here in Florida, as I've for many years, almost 20 years, worked with a veterans group, a progressive veterans group here in Sarasota called Florida Veterans for Common Sense, which I don't need to go into right now, but these are mostly Vietnam era veterans. And I just got a very late text running like 10 hours late telling me where the protest today in Sarasota would have been. And I sent back to him, I said, a little late, you know, a little late.
Yeah, there were anti-Trump protesters all over the country today.
Right. There's energy which doesn't seem to depend at all upon the Democratic leadership.
Right.
And the question is, will the Democratic leadership figure out that it's their task to start articulating a democratic, small d, democratic vision and project that these people can rally behind? Bam.
NBC News reporting, the new DNC chair kicks off a multi-state tour. Ken Martin, a little bit on that. His trip starts on Monday, bring him to Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, as well as Texas and Missouri. They include meeting with U.S. steelworkers, meeting with state Democratic Party chairs in Illinois and Missouri, door knocking for Democratic State House candidates, and what else here? Here's a quote from the new chair, Ken Martin, from NBC. It's time for the DNC to get out of D.C. That means getting out of our comfort zone, having tough but honest conversations with voters, and showing that we're willing to fight for people. Democrats will win by organizing everywhere, competing across the ballot in every community, and uniting working families from all backgrounds. It's time for Dems to show up in all 3,244 counties, red, purple, blue, and make our case.
Sweet, but I'm not impressed.
Those are the right words, though, right? I mean, isn't that what you want to hear?
No, I wanted to hear 2 days ago. Now I want to start hearing what it is that the Democrats are going to represent. I go on about this all the time with you.
Do it again. I want to hear it again. Tell them once, tell them again, tell them again.
The last 20 years of my career and more, I have been desperately trying to get Democrats, liberals, progressives, they're all in the same boat as far as I'm concerned. They are completely either ignorant or literally have turned their backs on history. History should tell them what to do. And I don't mean it specifically the words or anything else, but the fact is we have many good examples from the past century. And I'm thinking especially, you know where I'm going, of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, okay? But not only him. There were great senators like La Follette of Wisconsin, like Norris of Nebraska, like Wagner of New York, and others who basically argued for a working people's democratic party, okay? And it worked. In fact, keep in mind, La Follette comes out of the progressive wing, of the Republican Party in Wisconsin. And in 1936, FDR turned his back on the Democrats in Wisconsin in favor of La Follette. Now, that's the kind of leadership we want. We want people who are prepared to engage, and not just themselves, not just their peers, but willing to engage the American people in support of progressive in actions that will enhance and empower working people. So I want to hear Democrats start talking about Franklin Roosevelt. I want to hear them start talking about the past, which is theirs, okay, for them, and take some guidance from that history. You know, back in 2016, after we lost that election, I wrote a piece for Moyers. I don't know if I've ever shared that one with you. And basically what it said is maybe sorry, I don't mean to use the old Vietnam War talk. Maybe the Democrats need re-education camps for themselves. Not re-education as in propagandizing stuff, but there ought to be courses for Democrats and maybe even quizzes and tests so they have to know who FDR was, what it was he accomplished, and what the labor movement in tandem with FDR accomplished. That's the kind of thing. Let them start talking about where they're going. Yeah, sure, let's have conversations, but let's make it clear. You're the Democratic Party, and there are things you should know, and there are things you should be saying to inspire people. People are not as dumb, and they're not as amnesiac as these Democrats seem to be. That's my point.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. That's Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Great point, Harvey, and I certainly appreciate it. And I think especially if you look at seemingly some of the playbook coming out of MAGA right now is also has historical overtones to it. We've seen this before. You know, this has all happened, and what was the consequence of those actions in the past? Well, it was those folks that you mentioned, man. It was La Follette. It was FDR. Those were the folks, and those were the ideas and the actions that helped overcome what literally we're seeing in this authoritarian movement in the MAGAs right now. Like, literally, that's right. It's right here, right now. Their history, quote unquote, our history, our entire country's history, world history, we've seen this. It's ebbing and flowing, and it doesn't repeat, but sure sounds the same. 855-752-4842. A couple of callers. Let's get to them. Tom from L.A., you're up. Welcome, Tom. What do you got for us?
Well, as you know, I'm a proud FDR Democrat.
Yes.
And Harvey, what I would say, I don't understand. You know, the Democrats must be just scared to death with Citizens United and money in politics that they can't stand up and say, you know, hey, these economic royalists. I mean, take it after these people directly, immediately, instead of playing footsie. You know, if they're playing the Republicans are playing the Hitler playbook, why don't we play the Franklin Delano Roosevelt playbook? I mean, this is just getting ridiculous. And the thing is, Democrats need to be bold. They need to stop being so, when someone asks you a question, just say yes or no. And just sit there and just keep going with the fact that you have a billionaire. Everyone in the country knows we get a billionaire that's running the country right now. So what the F? I just don't understand.
All right, Tom, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for holding on to the economic royalist. And I think he also has a good point, too. And our pal Maggie Dawn talks about this, her show 2-4 right here on Civic Media before me. Sound like a human being. You know, don't sound like a politician when you're talking to people. Talk like a real person. Don't be coached. Don't do those things. Make some mistakes. Say the wrong word. You know, be a normal person when you talk about these issues. And I think that goes a long way. I like the economic royalist. Harvey, your thoughts?
Well, in fact, after we come back from the next break, I should read everyone what FDR said in 1936 about those economic royalists, if I haven't done it often enough.
All right, we will. Yes, and when we come back from the break, and we got a couple more minutes in the segment, we'll take some more calls. 855-752-4842. Don't forget, we end the show, tell us something good. We end the show on a positive note here, folks. That's how we roll. 855-752-4842. Pat from the MKE, you are next. Welcome, Pat. Thanks for your patience. What do you got for us?
Hello, Dom and Harvey. I'm Pat from Milwaukee. I was raised by Roosevelt Democrats and turned into a yippie in my youth. but the fact is that Trump doesn't know any history or anything. But when he spouts nonsense like it's okay to I'm saving the country, that is a kind of a paraphrase of some of Napoleon's justification for his behavior, and more recently, it was a paraphrase of the killer in, I think it was Sweden or Norway, about 7 years ago, who attacked a camp, a progressive camp, and a school, and killed 77 people.
Oh, that's right.
The crazy neo-Nazi. He quoted that too. That he was trying to save his country, and excuse me.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. Appreciate it. 855-752-4842. Donald Trump saying those phrases that it's I don't want to talk it out of turn, but I don't have it in front of me. Something if you're not breaking the law, if you save the country, right? I mean, that is just an asinine, anti-democratic, authoritarian position. Go ahead, Harvey.
I want to check with Jess. How much time we got here?
About a minute and a half.
Okay, this is the moment then. Let me read FDR's words. Okay?
All right.
This is what he said accepting renomination for president in 1936 in a stadium with like 100,000 Democrats and working people in attendance. These economic royalists, by the way, they had organized against him. They wanted to bring him down and they failed. These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. And listen to this, he says, our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of that kind of power.
Absolutely. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. The past is present. What will the future bring? Well, the next future, the future of the next segment is tell us something good. We know that's going to come down. You can do it as well. Join us. Tell us something good. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. One last segment for your thoughts. And Harvey K., come back with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Our last segment, just PS on the board, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. We're going to wrap it up by telling you something good. If you got something good to say, give us a call, shoot us a text, 855-75-CIVIC. Harvey, I'm going to start with you, man, as the guest of honor today. What do you got something good to share with everybody, man?
Okay, well, I'll just say, here we are in Sarasota, Florida. This is the 53rd anniversary of my wife's and my first date.
Oh, that's great, man.
Which was in London at a really remarkable pub. And tonight we are going out to a place called the Old Salty Dog, a really great place. And we're going to get grouper sandwiches. How do you like that?
I love it. Congratulations.
Key lime
happy
pie for dessert.
Anniversary. Yeah, key lime pie.
Quite likely. Quite likely.
Harvey's been texting us pictures of his food all week. I'm so hungry even right now thinking about it. I didn't know there were so many ways to make key lime pie. That's a positive thing.
And a lot of them in jars.
Right? A little easier, I guess. Hey, Harvey, that's awesome, man. Congratulations. Hope you guys have a wonderful,
also,
wonderful
say
time.
Although I won't be with you next Monday at this time, because that's when the Florida veterans are having their annual Thomas Paine party and I'm giving the grand toast, I will record that toast and make sure you guys have it.
Excellent, man. I cannot wait. That is awesome. How about you, Jess? You got something good to share?
Of course I do. This weekend, 2 days in a row, I got to spend more than an hour sitting on a couch looking at the snow and reading a book. And not just a book, a novel.
Oh!
Not news, not a textbook, a novel.
Not your
a
phone?
A story.
With paper? With a book with paper?
Oh, a lot of pages, yeah.
A lot this of pages, is, yeah.
This is a Brandon Sanderson novel, so there are a lot of pages. I've got the big book version, which has about 1,400 pages.
Oh, damn. Don't hurt yourself.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Did you stay awake the full hour each day?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
good. More power to you.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's a nice feeling. It was, mm-hmm. yeah, the sun. I know you're down in the Sunshine State there, Harvey, but we have a little bit of snow up here the last couple of days. So, you know, bring the sun back with you when you come. All right. I'm going to share this one out there as well. Last night, I got to watch the 50th anniversary presentation of Saturday Night Live. And I mean, this thing started in 75. And as we talked about earlier in the show, I mean, it was great. I mean, we were kids back then. It was only three channels on. It was groundbreaking. And, you know, your parents sometimes didn't want you watching it. You know what I mean? And it was great. And I'm not really a starstruck guy, but it was great to see all the folks. And I mean, hell, Bill Murray was there. You know, it was just a lot of fun. And then this morning, as I was up and perusing, you know, the headlines, and I got to the Atlantic. And they got a piece that says, "Do it for Gilda Radner. The too short life of a comedy genius is a reminder to the rest of us how to make good use of the time we are given." I'm just going to read the last two paragraphs here. Atlantic, they can be a little long sometime. We're going to run a little short. Gene Wilder from Milwaukee. You know, mm-hmm. Him and Gilda Radner, they were married for only 5 years before she died at the age of 42 of ovarian cancer. And today, she is remembered as much for the unfairness of her young death, like Belushi before her and Chris Farley after her, as she is for her originality and spectacular talent. In a gentler world, all three of them would still be with us. Radner and Belushi would be in their 70s, Farley in his 60s. In a gentler world, Radner could have all the babies she wished for, made all the movies she never got to, and would still be making people laugh. When I think about Radner now, what I think about most is the way she lived and how that ought to be a lesson to the rest of us. She had a sense of total urgency and a willingness to do the things that terrified her. Somehow she made it look easy. Quote, "I don't know why I'm doing it," she once said in an interview about why she'd chosen to take her act to Broadway. "Except for some reason, I've chosen to scare myself to death." That was Gilda Radner. Gilda, who as a child once overheard her mother saying Gilda could sell ice cubes in winter, and so set up a little stand outside just to do that. Gilda, who loved work so much that she'd get impatient on the way to NBC Studios and ask her taxi drivers to speed up already. Gilda, who fell in love easily and often and wasn't afraid to be weird or look ridiculous. Gilda, who would make anything funny. But her real legacy, it turns out, is something much more profound than her comedy. This is the lesson of Gilda Radner's too short life. For God's sake, don't bother with fear. Just go for the thing you want with your whole heart. Each of us gets only so much time on this planet, and none of us knows for how long. Life can be terrible this way and sad, and it isn't fair at all. But it is funny, anyway. Really, really funny. Gilda Radner. Just awesome. She was so damn funny. And I forget until I saw some of these skits from last night how funny she was. Rosanna, Dana, I know you're not getting some of this, Jess, but we'll catch you up.
No, I know that one.
I was touched and moved when I read the whole piece. We'll put it in the show notes from The Atlantic, so you want to remember and appreciate Gilda Radner and her contribution. And I'm down with, I mean, come on, forget about the fear, folks. Live life. And it's funny. It is funny. And it's tragic. And it's sad. But mostly, it's funny.
Indeed.
Harvey K. Any last words, my friend?
I'm applauding your words.
Thank you, man. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We will not talk next Monday, but do a great job, man. Look forward to hearing your toast. Appreciate what you do, my friend. Jess P.S. on the board. Thank you. Glad you got to read a couple hours of your novel. You know, sometimes my wife, Steph, falls asleep in bed when she's reading it, and the book kind of falls on her. So be careful that a book that size can hurt if it falls on your face. Folks, stick around now. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe is coming up next. We will see you here tomorrow. Have a wonderful evening.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community.
Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.